This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're tuned into The Morning Run with Xiaoning and myself, Roshan. And that was You Get What You Give, Get What You Give by New Radicals, and speaking about getting what you give. I have a question for you, Xiaoning, this morning. Is regifting unacceptable?
Ooh, this is like very complex, you know. However you answer, if you say yes, then you sound like a cheapskate. Like a real cheapo or ungrateful, you know, like the worst kind of person to give a gift to. But then if you say no, then but you don't like the gift and it sits at the bottom of your drawer, isn't that a waste too? So what's the right answer? I guess it depends who gave it to you and what is the gift.
Exactly. I think it's a conundrum, right? Because, you know, all of us can say, or at least I can say that I've gotten gifts that are less than functional for myself over the years. But you don't want to give it away because you feel, well, guilty or unappreciative of the gift that you've received. But at the same time, the other side of your brain is telling you someone else could actually use this
yeah.
and benefit from the functionality of this gift or the appreciation for this gift. So what do you do if, let's say, someone wants, you give someone a hat, but this person never wears a hat, but you know someone who does wear a hat all the time. Now you've got a brand new hat in your hand. Can you wrap it up and give it to this other person as a gift?
Depends who gave you the hat. How close are you to that person? And then what happens if the person expects to see you with the hat? Dun, dun, dun. And never seen you with the hat or asked you one day.
It's like a house of cards right there. It's like a Ponzi scheme of free gifting.
Yeah. So I think it really depends who gave you that gift. And maybe you should be honest with that person. So if it's someone very, very close, like my siblings have given me, I would say gifts. I'm like, upper any, you know, for what? I would say, hey, guys, why did you give me this? I won't be able to use it. Can you change it for something? You need to be that close to that person to kind of say, get me something else.
Yeah, so there's data out of the National Retail Federation in the States that the average American spends about more than $1,000 on gifts for the holiday season, and that one in seven were unhappy with the gifts they received for Christmas, yet more than half keep the gifts. So you've got one in seven.
It's the guilt, right?
It's the guilt. It's the shame. It's also the shame of being, you're a person who re-gifts presents. That's an issue, right? Because end of the day, we all do want a safe face. We don't want to be known as the cheapskate or the overly frugal person. I think there's a difference between being frugal and being known as a cheapskate.
Also, it's like, do you come across as being ungrateful? Because the person did buy you that gift, right? And did give it to you. And then suddenly, you're like, you don't really like it. So you just kind of pass it on. Yeah, so yes, there is some shame towards it. But like I say, if you know the person well enough, maybe the key is not regifting it, but changing the gift, right? So like my sisters, if they give me something that's not suitable, and I know them so well, they know me so well, I think it's fine to just say, hey guys, can I change it for something else?
Yeah, I think that's why whenever I buy presents, I do keep the receipts, especially if it's clothes, because you never know that you may have made a mistake.
Oh, I do that with my brother-in-law all the time because I always make him fatter than he really is.
So you just black out the price tag.
No, I don't even bother to do it. I know him so well. I say, now here's the receipt. You go and change it for whatever you like.
Okay, that's next level customization right there. It's okay, you deal with this. So then if that's the case, why not just get a gift card then?
Because you do want to make a little bit of effort in choosing something. But of course, it can go wrong. Yeah, but a gift card is not a bad idea. Next year, Roshan, I will think of a gift card instead.
Yeah, because I've had that. I've had a maybe, let's just call it one in three miss.
Your hit rate is so high.
Yeah, where people are like, this is a great gift. Thank you. I love the thought. But it's not something I would wear.
What did they give you? Hair gel?
Oh, no. As in I've given other people.
Oh, you've given. I thought somebody gave you some hair gel or mousse or curlers.
And for all of those who don't get the joke, I have no hair on my head. And that's why gel is not suitable for me. But yeah, the one in three isn't me giving people gifts. So there's always one in three where like, oh, this is a great, I appreciate it, but I'm never going to use this, or I'm never going to wear this. And I'm like, don't worry, I got the receipt. What would you wear? And I'll try and sort that out.
Okay. I've been given boo-boo gifts. Like as I've said before on air, why do people give me soft toys? And I never know what to do with it. And usually I just give it to a charity or to my nieces. It's totally like not me, but people seem to love giving me cutesy stuff, which is okay. But yeah, I think nowadays there's definitely a way to even if you you don't like the gift and you don't want to hurt the person's feelings, I think you can something positive can come out of it. So you can either give it to a charity shop, right, so that they can raise money for a good cause, or you can pass on that gift to someone who wants it. I mean, it's all about the circular economy, right? Why waste anything?
Yeah, and you know, if you know someone who would appreciate, if you get a coffee grinder for Christmas, but you don't drink coffee, right? And you know someone who does, I don't see the harm in, I mean, essentially re-gifting that to someone else.
Maybe sometimes the best thing is to be honest about it. Yeah. If you re-gift something, say, I got this, and honestly, I don't use it. I think you might. So why don't you enjoy it?
Yeah, it's about intention and outcome also, right? It's not about, oh, I'm lazy to get a gift. I'm just going to take this, wrap it up and give it to someone. It's, no, I really thought that you would enjoy this. And disclaimer, I got this from someone else.
Yeah, and I think that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, I could have given it away. I could have sold it. But instead, I'm giving it to you. I mean, you don't have to say that, but that you can imply that in your Christmas card to that person. Anyway, however you go about it, let us know what you think. Is re-gifting unacceptable? Up next, this Christmas, were you a last-minute shopper? Let us know. And how hectic were the malls? Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Such Great Heights by Postal Service. And you've tuned in to The Morning Run with Xiaoning and myself, Roshan. Now, speaking of the Postal Service, were you a last-minute shopper this year for Christmas? Because it seems that a lot of people were looking online to help help with their procrastination, and that had burdened some of the US delivery system this year. It didn't help that the holiday season was shorter, with Thanksgiving being 6 days later than it, I guess, than last year. I'm Xiaoning, I don't want to ask you whether you're a last-minute shopper, because you seem someone that's always ready and prepared.
I have a drawer full of gifts just waiting.
You have backup gifts?
I have backup gifts for everybody.
Are these gifts that have been gifted to you by other people?
No, they are gifts that I collect throughout the year, which I already kind of semi-have people in mind. Of course, I'm guilty. I have some generic gifts. So, like, gifts that you can give to anyone. Not very exciting, but still useful. A lot of it is toiletries, for example. I have, I think, at least 3 or 4 wraps, scarves that women like generally. Notebooks, I have those. Yeah, I'm prepared.
You're a scout. Be prepared. That's a scout motto.
You guys know that from my table right underneath. There's like always something for somebody.
You mean with the under the table where you've got a supply for the apocalypse, basically?
Yes. Name it. What do you want? You want a sewing kit? I have it.
You have a sewing kit? Okay, great. Yeah. I'm learning more about you in the studio than I am outside. And we sit next to each other on top of all of that. So it's very interesting to see how people prepare for the holidays, because there's another survey from the National Retail Federation in the States showed that 52% of people, only 52% of people have prepared their gifts before the start of December. I mean, it's either half glass empty or half full, because you can look at it as half the people were ready and half the people procrastinated.
Well, that's about right, if you think about the odds, right? But it doesn't, probably more people are encouraged, or not to say encouraged, they can get away with it because, you know, there's things like Amazon Prime, right, which delivers like next day. So you can, if you really, really want to cut it thin, you can probably still buy stuff on the 22nd and 23rd and it will get delivered on time. Yeah. Even here in Malaysia, I think there's a Zalora special service where you pay a premium for a whole year and they kind of guarantee next day delivery. So, hey, for the people who really like to cut it thin, it is still possible. It doesn't mean you have to physically run, you know, to Mid Valley or 1U to kind of grab that gift that you should have bought but you didn't buy.
I'm the type of person who does go to the retail store to buy my last minute gifts, which is what I did. I went to some malls on Christmas Eve.
Was it chaos?
It was almost chaos. I was just very lucky because when I entered the parking lot, someone had just left the spot right in front of me. So that was someone watching over me there and saying, okay, here you go. Let's get those gifts sorted out now. But I already knew what I wanted to get. That's where the online platforms really help. But I don't trust the delivery to get it to me on time. So I was just waiting for an opportunity to go and get it. Lucky for me, what I wanted was in stock.
It wasn't sold out.
It wasn't sold out. But the mall was really, was packed.
Yeah.
I'm guessing all Christmases are like that.
Well, I went to Mid Valley yesterday and it was And I went late, okay, and it was crazy. Maybe it's all the people returning their gifts. Because they opened it on Christmas Day, it was like, upper innie, I don't want it. So last minute, returned it back. But no, the point is, it's normal, right, for people to kind of leave it to the last moment. Maybe in your mind, you know, half the problem is, what do I get this person? It's like it weighs on you, and then you kind of like, I'll think about it. And then it comes to the 23rd or 24th, and then you're like, alamak, haven't thought about it. Just run to the mall and buy the first thing I see.
All that stress gets you into the state of flow so that you can pick the right gift. Of course, I could be completely talking nonsense at this point, but it reminds me a lot of assignments. You know, you delay and you delay because you're not sure how to start your assignment until all the stress compounds itself and you just start writing.
You
and
do an all-nighter.
You do an all-nighter and then you produce something that's, it's all right. You know, it's good. It's not great, but it's good.
Okay, I have a suggestion for people who perhaps want to give something and then they just have no clue. You know, I suggest give the gift of charity.
That's a good gift.
Yeah. So, you know, everybody has a cause that they kind of really resonate with, right? Whether it's animals, elderly care, you know. Why don't you give that sum of money that you wanted to buy the gift and donate it to that person's charity and then write it in an envelope? You see, for most of us, we are blessed. We have more than enough. So it's the season also to remember others. So I've started doing this. This is my little thing. No need to rush, no need to panic, no need to go to any mall. All you need to do is actually to have a card.
Yeah, actually, that's a great idea because I think we did this my entire family did this a few years ago after one of the floods. And it just didn't feel very Christmassy to be celebrating while people were suffering like that. And we as all collectively said, okay, how much are you going to spend on presents? Let's put this all together and give it to people who actually need it.
Yeah, I saw in one of my friends' Facebooks also, they decided not to do any Secret Santa this year. And what they did was they collected all the money for a Secret Santa and gave it away to charity. So yeah, this is something, a good idea actually.
So a nice little note for you to keep in mind for 364 days from today. Up next, we have the 6:30 a.m. news. After that, we're going to be talking about whether frugality has got its groove back. To take you there, Gypsies, Tramps and Thieves by Cher. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Talk Show on Mute by Incubus. And you're tuned in to The Morning Run with Xiaoning and myself, Roshan. Now, we've got a story in front of us from the Wall Street Journal. It's a decade in review, and they're saying that frugality has got its groove back. Now, this is a story from their personal finance editor who's taken the time to talk about how money basically has looked over the last decade, going from on the back of the financial crisis at that point where people were feeling insecure and pensions were destroyed in the States, frugality came back in vogue. People either out of necessity or because of just the sheer trauma of watching money collapse around them. And then as time progressed, there was a little bit of backlash against this with the YOLO movement that proclaimed that, hey, you save money till you for retirement, but there's no guarantee you make it to retirement.
Yeah, you only live once, right? So that was the mantra. But I think anyone who's lived through hardship, definitely that changes their behavior when it comes to spending for life. So my grandmother is classic, of course. I mean, she's passed away, but she lived through World War II. And anyone who has lived through World War II, of course, will tell you really horrendous stories about not having enough food. And she was, I would call it a squirreler. She would squirrel everything away. To the point where it was, I think, borderline hoarding. And some of the dietary habits of hers, which she has passed on to me, she's always like tapioca, food that you got during the war, right? And I like it because when we grew up, that's what we ate. So, and that changes your outlook towards money, towards material possessions for life. And I think it also continued with my mother, you know, because you know, it's that whole family attitude, right? So you guys also laugh at me at some of the crazy things I do. Like, I refuse to buy coffee outside. I just refuse, unless I'm meeting someone. I'm like, why? Got coffee in the office, Mark, and drink.
Yeah, no, we get, and we've had plenty of discussions about this outside the studio. And I guess it comes down to what you value, right?
Yeah.
It comes down to that because there are people who buy branded bags and I...
Guilty.
And I could not care for them.
Yeah, that's true.
As long as the bag can hold my laptop and bring it to the office and doesn't look completely and utterly ugly, I'm okay with that.
That's because we are human beings, right? We are full of contradictions. So there are certain things in our mind, I think, you know, that are like, no go, I will not spend money on. And then there are some things which are like, way, go, 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 you know. So for me, definitely, you know, you put a lipstick in front of me and it's a go, go, go. You put a latte in front of me and it's like $12. I'm like, no, I'll just go home and make my own, or I'll just drink a Nescafe or like a Kopitiam coffee or whatever.
Yeah, and I guess that's born out of the what we value, our tastes, our preferences. And it's very, what's the word I want to use here? Very stereotypical, because it's the millennial gap as well, because millennials love to spend money on food and lattes, and I conform to some of that. I fall in the avocado toast thing,
you know. Yes, I look at it, I'm like, toast thing.
I don't have avocado toast. I just cut the avocado in half and eat it with a spoon. I'm very functional in that sense. But I do love my lattes. But that said, I'm generally also very frugal, because I have compulsory savings. I do whatever said and done at the beginning of the month. I have money going out. And this is also something we always talk about on Ring In Sense, and which is happening today at 9:30. Hint, hint, wink, wink. If you want to catch that, because we'll be talking...
Plug it, Roshan.
Yeah, we'll be talking about basically fintech and what it looks like here in Malaysia, and access to capital markets and all of that. But, you know, it's simple things like not buying things for the sake of buying them. We were talking earlier about presents and regifting, and materialism becomes very strong during the Christmas time, because it's the commercial Christmas spirit, essentially. So it's nice that we are talking about these things, that it's not unacceptable, completely unacceptable anyway, to regift things or to give away things or to donate to charity in someone else's name as a gift. But on the flip side, I mean, people have had to save because they have to. People have had to become frugal because incomes, we've talked about this on the show, World Bank report, incomes aren't growing even though inflation is low.
You're living longer.
People are living longer. Retirement is the amount of how much your money can last post-retirement, because you're living longer, bond yields are coming down, where are you going to put money later on? These are all very stressful things.
They are very practical reasons why frugality should be in, or maybe is in. And there's never a harm in looking at how you spend your money and maybe going through it with a bit of a fine-tooth comb and kind of saying, okay, I don't need this, I don't need this, I'll do away with this. And making these small lifestyle changes. And, you know, before you know it, you've actually saved quite a fair bit of money. And yeah, if you put it away into the right investment or into even the savings, there's the benefit of compounding interest, right? So, yeah, I think there's no shame in being a little bit frugal, especially with yourself.
Oh, for sure. And I think we all aren't made aware enough of the powers of compounding interest, because just simply starting with a small amount and starting early is better than starting later with a higher perceived amount.
It's never too late to start. So even if you're in your 40s and 50s and you think, hey, I don't have a retirement plan, well, it's not too late to have a look at your finances and to see where you can squirrel away some money and start that retirement plan. A bit late, but never too late.
Yeah, plenty of conversations there. In fact, I was having one with Steve Lim of Afin Huang a while back. I think this was in conjunction with World Children's Day or Universal Children's Day, about how to plan for your kids and teaching them the value of compounding, teaching them the value of savings, basically give them an allowance. And when they want something, you say, oh, well, you can save this and buy this later, or you can buy this now. It's up to you.
But I found that I listened to that Ring In Sense episode, and the takeaway for me is don't have children.
Yeah, I had to end that episode saying, listen, having children is a choice. It's up to you. But just know that these are the things that you need to be aware of. And the other one was just starting a kids fund. If you start a kids fund from the time your kid is born and just put 100 ringgit a month, versus doing it 20 years later, the difference is over R1 million by the time that kid retires. So that's just the pure value of compounding interest right there.
Yeah, so start frugal and maybe start squirreling a little bit every day.
Now, when it comes to money, a lot of us work for our money. I hope a lot of us work for our money anyway. And we're going to be talking about have we wrapped our identity too much in the things that we do and the way that we work. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're tuned into The Morning Run with Xiaoning and myself, Roshan. And that was Run Baby Run by Garbage. Now, I wonder if that's a question some of us ask ourselves at the end of the workday. Run, baby, run.
That's my question usually at 6:30 on a weekend.
So I guess the question we have today for this last quarter of 6 a.m. Is it bad to have your identity wrapped up in work, or are you good to go? Are you good to separate yourself from your work?
I think it's a little bit, okay, I can only use myself as an example, right? And I think it's hard to separate what you do at work from your identity, because we honestly spend so much time at work. I mean, you're supposed to spend 8 hours in the office and 24 hours in a day. But let's face it, for me, definitely it's more than 8 hours a day I spend at work. So I can't really separate my identity from work. And it's a little bit also, I think it changes from career to career. Don't you think so, Roshan?
Yeah. This reminds me a lot of the argument between between passion, making your passion your work, right? Because I've had people who say, like, I do not want to make my passion my work, because then my passion no longer becomes my passion. It becomes a job. And immediately the creative side of that dies. Mm. Some people have thrived. And I think it comes down to personality. If you can live and breathe what it is you work and produce, then you're okay with that. But some people need that delineation. They need to be like, this is work, this is home, this is, this, for example, this is work Roshan, this is home Roshan, this is Roshan brother Roshan, you know, like these are the different
bro ro.
Yes, Shani.
So what's bro? So there's the bro ro, there's the Roshan work, and there's the what? The family Roshan.
I mean, that's a hypothetical situation. A lot of times,
but it's actually true. You carve yourself into three portions, right?
I try. I try to not let them bleed into each other, because you don't want it to affect other parts of your life.
Mm-hmm.
But a big part of our job is that we do have to represent the company when we are out and about, whether
yes.
it's events.
Remember, we went to a person's wedding on Saturday.
Yes, yes.
And the minute we said we were from BFM, mm-hmm. I think there were like many questions about what we do, how we get ready every day. People are fascinated. So even when we are like out of the office and we are actually having bro ro time, I don't have the equivalent. Yeah, people ask. So it's and I'm happy to answer the questions. And I think all of us are, you know. So sometimes it is difficult to separate working life from like private life or your me time.
Yeah, and it comes down to the work you do and the personality that you have, and whether fundamentally it comes down to whether you enjoy it or not. There are some people who had a passion for guitar and then made it their jobs and loved it and then became Metallica. And then some people who don't, right?
Yeah.
Or some people who are happy being semi-pro guitarists, doing that day-to-day, being like some of our local bands. So they do another job on the side just to keep that going.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one-size-fits-all here, but some of the things that come up are, if you are so wrapped up in your work and something happens to that job, what happens to your self-worth and personality?
Yeah, that is the challenge. And I think that's why people, you know, especially in their 40s, they have this thing called the midlife crisis, right? Mm. Because they've just worked continuously for the last 20, 25 years. And all they know how to do is that job. And then suddenly it comes to them, it's like, then they're like, ding, you know, the light bulb comes on and think, what is this all about?
What have I done with my life?
Yeah, where has it gone? Where's the 20 years? And what am I going to do for the rest of it? And yeah, some people change careers. Some people try something new. I'm one of them. You know, I did a big career change. But I think you should always have some passion about the work that you do. You should be proud of it. It should be part of your identity. There's no running away from it, because we spend so much time at work. And for me, the outcome of it is something to be proud of. You know, I'm very proud of the BFM name. And people come out and say, oh, you work at BFM. I'm always eager to say, okay, this is what we do on a daily basis. You know, how we get the show going. And please listen in. Do tell us what you think. And yeah, you want to have that joy. You want to have that pride in that work. And if that thing is missing, maybe it's time for a rethink about why you are doing the things you are doing.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that sometimes, I do find meaning in my work. And but then, you know, sometimes I talk to some of my friends who don't have the same connection with their work. And then you feel a bit like some people just don't have find meaning in their work, so they find meaning elsewhere.
Yeah, we've talked about this in different conversations, whether people should change jobs. And yes, it's not always the easiest. But even within the job, maybe you could request for new responsibilities,
mm-hmm.
change department, right? It doesn't have to be so radical that you run out and quit your job. Maybe relook at the task that you're doing in the office rather than just approach it in a humdrum way. But I think you need to bring something to yourself every day when you come to work.
Yeah, or if that fails, then just accept the fact that work is work and that you have other facets of your life that bring you meaning, because not everyone is going to enjoy what they do and not everyone is going to be passionate about what it is they do. But if you've as long as you have other parts of your life that make it worth it, then you're good to go. Or at least that's just some ramblings from me over here. Anyway, we're coming up to the end of the 7 a.m. Of the 6 a.m. hour. Up next is the 7 a.m. news bulletin. And after that, we'll be asking our market analyst why he expects all economies but China to show positive growth. What's going to hold back the Chinese economy next year? To take you there, Summer of 69 by Brian Adams. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.